Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
It's Mike Shope.
We were having a very serious conversation about mayonnaise here.
And the Bulldog.
And don't even talk to me about weed.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Look, that open really captures the spirit of the thing. Like I like that. I like that one a lot. Glad to have you with us here on a Wednesday afternoon. Sal is in for Mike Shope this afternoon. I am the Bulldog. Thanks for hanging. And on the AT&T hotline right now is our old buddy from Pittsburgh, Andrew Filippone, 93.7, the Fan in Pittsburgh. Andrew, good afternoon, my man. How are you?
Bulldog, I hate mayonnaise.
Well, that's a good thing to hate because it's not good for you. So good call.
I'm one of those guys that if I go someplace and there's mayonnaise on the sandwich, I want to, like, give it back and say, like, make me another one, but I'm also very passive-aggressive about those kinds of things. So I usually just complain to my wife about it and end up eating it, but ultimately, I don't know about you, but I have a hard time, like, if I go out to eat, giving food back.
Right, yeah. No, my wife loves when I get upset about things that I'm not going to do anything about.
Yes.
That's one of her all-time favorite. Like,
yes.
Oh, good, he's going to sit here and bitch about this for the next 45 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've got that down to a mastery.
Yep.
I've got
good.
That down
wow,
to
you've not been married that long, so good job. You made good progress. So did Le'Veon Bell do the Steelers a favor by not accepting the 5-year, $70 million contract? Like, how do you view what's going on with Le'Veon Bell and the Steelers, Andrew?
Yeah, I was ecstatic when he didn't sign that deal because I'm of the opinion that even though his agent says that he's a multi-threat player, that he's like this new age or new type of running back, which is ridiculous. Marshall Faulk had 100 catch season, and David Johnson had more catches 2 years ago and had more yards 2 years ago than what Bell did in 2017. So he's trying to say that his client is one of a kind, and that's just not entirely true.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think that running backs are built to last forever, especially one that has considerable baggage like Bell. So they haven't won a Super Bowl with him. You could make the argument they really haven't come that close. And I'd rather go back into the draft and get a young running back who costs me like $4 or $5 million a year if you take him in the first round or the second round. And try to put more money into their defense. So I don't want to invest all my money into the offense, and I also don't want to invest a lot of money into a running back.
There's also the little tidbit about how they're at least as good, if not actually better offensively, when he has not been in the lineup, which is kind of weird. And it's not just like one or two games. And we're talking about, I think it's like 18 games or so. Is that the number?
So the last 16 games they've played without him, their record in those games is 11-5. And in 2015, when he got injured at the halfway point of the season, Vontaze Burfict took him out, and he was done for the year. D'Angelo Williams went in at running back, and he had 11 touchdowns that season. And the offense as a whole finished fourth in scoring. The only three teams that were better were the Panthers, who had the MVP, Cam Newton, Arizona, who had the runner-up in the MVP, Carson Palmer, and the Patriots. So they were really no worse for wear without him. And if you look at the last 2 years, I think is the range here. The last 2 years of data, when he's in the lineup versus when he's not in the lineup, their yards per game is like 1 or 2 yards of difference. Like, it's very minimal, his effect overall on the offense when he's in versus when he's out.
Hey, Andrew, it's Sal Capaccio. How are you?
Hey, Sal, what's up, man?
Hey, so I'm interested in the whole dynamics of just the Steelers organization, how they've treated things in the past. They've always seemed to be a team that never likes to spend really big money. They don't go out and sign a lot of free agents. They're very good at home-growing talent and then retaining their own. Even for them, though, this salary seems really high for them to be able to swallow. So from their perception and their angle of things, you know, where is this playing out and where is it ultimately going?
So from their vantage point, I think that one of the core beliefs that they have is they don't guarantee money beyond the first year. So even if you look at Antonio Brown's first season, like, and that would have been last year on a new contract, the only money that was guaranteed was the $19 million that he made in his first year. So I'm almost positive, but for salary cap purposes, they basically took his entire salary last year and made it into a signing bonus. So he got like $17 or $18 million up front. And then like the $1 million that was left over got spaced out over the 17-week season. And they were willing to give Bell $10 million in a signing bonus. And then I don't know the complete breakdown of his contract, but like, let's say he was going to make $16 million in his first year. Well, then the $6 million, so 10 plus 16, $16 million salary, 10 would be a signing bonus and 6 would be what he made over the 17 weeks of the season. And they weren't going to budge that far from that. So they weren't going to make an exception to a rule. When guys have contracts, when they're under contract, they don't negotiate with them on a new deal until that player is going into the last year. So they won't rip up a contract with like 2 or 3 years left and give a guy a new one. That's another one of their core principles. I think one of the things that I disagree with them on is, I think even with this offer, they were ready to kind of break, from the NFL trend of not giving running backs a premium salary. They were ready to give him, I think Ian Rappaport reported, $33 million in the first 2 years of this deal, which is an average of $16.5 million, which is more than double what the next highest paid running back is making.
So is this the last season in a Steelers uniform for Le'Veon Bell?
100%, yes, 100%. I say that because if they were to franchise him next year, that would be the average salary for the top five highest paid quarterbacks. There's no way that happens.
Right.
And the other thing they could do is transition tag him. So, like, not to go too inside football here with you guys, but so the transition tag would mean you take, I think it is, he gets another, like, percentage bump in salary. So that would take him from about $14.5 million to $17 million next year. But with the transition tag, It's like you can make a guy an offer sheet with a restricted free agent in hockey. Like, every team would be able to make an offer to him, and there's no way a team wouldn't, like, even if it was like 4 years at $40 million, that'd still be more than the $17 million that they were going to pay him in the first year. So I don't think there's any way that they would retain him unless the market just wasn't there for him and they felt like they were getting a bargain on him, which I don't think is going to happen.
We're talking with former WGR staffer. You like that? Staffer. Andrew Filippone. He's at 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh now. How is this going over with fans? Like, are they siding with the Steelers? My sense in these situations in Buffalo has usually been when a player wants more money, the fans always side with the team. It's always curious to me, but we always end up, I think, just deciding that the player's being a greedy jerk and that the team is in the right. How's it going in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I think that it's pretty comparable. I remember when I was with you guys, like 10 years ago, and the whole Jason Peters thing happened.
Right.
And he was like a pariah in Buffalo, and that's a left tackle compared to one of the, you know, top players overall in the entire league. So I think you've got it right, Chris. I think what happened here, what worked against him, is that he had, like, the things behaviorally that you ask out of a player. Like, you ask somebody if they're going to try to, like, set the market or break the bank. Can they get, like, the little things right? Can they conduct themselves professionally on social media? No, Val doesn't do that. The day before they played the Jaguars in the playoffs, he said he couldn't wait to play New England. He had already, you know, acted like the game the next morning, or the next afternoon, I should say, was, like, in the bag and a guarantee. So that irritated people. He's gotten suspended for not just, you know, it's not just failing drug tests. It's the fact that he got arrested for driving high on his way to a preseason game. So he was high on his way to work. That didn't go over well. It's the fact that he's, like, in rap songs because he thinks he has this burgeoning hip-hop career. He's talked about how, like, the fans have turned against him and has kind of made them into the villain in all of this. So, you know, and then, like, one more thing, which is maybe the most important thing, is that he didn't show up to practice the day before their playoff game. So, like, the things that, you know, if he was just a 1,500-yard back and had a monster season last year, I think that there would be fans here who said, you know what, just give this guy his money. He's a really good player. We're in the business of keeping really good players. But I do think that there's, like, a malignant or, like, cancerous cloud that fans here think hangs over this guy. And they kind of look at him as maybe not worth the trouble. So I think right now we've reached a point where the vast majority of fans say, good riddance, we're going to, like, ride the wheels off you this year, and then good luck playing for the New York Jets or the Cleveland Browns next year.
So, yeah, how does this year play out then? Just like last year, like, he shows up at the end of training camp in time to get ready to play the opener, and like, is it an uneasy marriage, or is everybody just going to be professional and it's fine?
Well, I think it all depends on, like, who. Yeah, I think with the coach, I think Tomlin has always been a very vocal supporter of him, even going back to his rookie year. He loves Bell. So I don't think that this is going to create a chasm or a schism between him and his coach, number one.
Okay.
I don't think that his teammates have turned on him through this process. You know, even though the majority of guys in that locker room can't comprehend making, like, $15 million a year and might be put off by the fact that somebody would say no to that, I think, like, Roethlisberger is probably his biggest ally. Ben has said numerous times that he thinks that Bell, even more so than Brown, is responsible for the success they have on offense.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it kind of trickles down from there. If the quarterback believes in this guy and isn't going to hold this against him, then I don't think that there's an issue in the locker room. I do think what you have the potential for, though, is if he's either not having a good season or they're riding him too hard, then I think that there could be, you know, the business interest of football could take over. And that's where, you know, you don't want this kind of hanging over you going into a make or break season. So I am kind of interested in how that plays out. If he's getting too many carries, is he nervous that that's going to negatively affect him when he goes into free agency? And if he's just not effective, well, then is he going to say, give me the ball more because I need the stats to get the money that I want?
Right. And almost any injury that he suffers at all, if it costs him any time, will probably be looked at skeptically. We went through this with Jarris Byrd, who had a foot issue and came back and played on a franchise tag. And it was just, you know, oh, he's just preserving himself. He's not really hurt. He just wants to make sure he's okay to hit the market. So, like, you probably will get some of that if he has the usual running back, you know, hamstring tightness or whatever, you know, the kind of travails that a running back, you know, usually goes through during a grueling football season.
Yeah, I think it is a little bit different than last year because he was on the franchise tag last season. He played all 16 games and plus the playoff games. But I think he probably knew, and his agent had probably told him that there was a chance that he was going to get franchise tagged again because the dollar figure wasn't, you know, prohibitive. And now we're to a point where he knows that he is, barring some unforeseen event, he will be a free agent. Like, he can see that light at the end of the tunnel. I think that's why Adam Schefter, probably from the agent, is a leveraging tactic, floated out there 2 days ago that Bell would consider taking his holdout into the season from a preservation standpoint of what's most valuable for me might be my health and not necessarily the production I have this year.
Yeah, we're used to dealing with Adisa Bakari here in Buffalo because he is Tyrod Taylor's agent as well, and when going through all of that stuff with him. And he's interesting the way he goes about his business and some of the things and some of the rhetoric he uses sometimes. Andrew Filippone, 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh. By the way, our sister station. Now we're all one family there with 93.7
CBS.
The Fan, CBS and Entercom. Andrew, Ben Roethlisberger, is this all done now? Are we not talking about retirement and what holds, what the future holds beyond this year anymore? And on to that note, what is his relationship with Mason Rudolph after everything that happened after the draft?
So to answer the first part of your question, I think that there's a good chance that he signs another contract with this team. He has 2 years left on his current contract, 2018-2019. Barring some kind of concussion that makes him think about his cognitive and mental state at the end of the year, even if he were to suffer like a broken ankle that cost him like half the season, I don't think that would be enough to force him into retirement. So I believe he'll sign. Maybe he'll give a little bit of money back to the team to allow them to make more moves, but I think he'll sign a deal between 2018 and 2019 that pays him around $30 million a season. So I think we'll probably have conservatively 3 years of Roethlisberger, possibly five. And I think the Rudolph, you know, the Rudolph thing now, people who are around minicamp are trying to, like, turn it back into a non-story. Well, you know, Ben was frustrated after the draft. He made those comments tongue-in-cheek. He wasn't serious. You know, he was at practices in minicamp and was very receptive to questions, and he also would give Rudolph unsolicited advice. But, you know, I think when there's no pressure on in May and, you know, you're months away from the start of the season, I think that's the time where it's easy to be friendly and cordial towards a guy who was drafted to take your job. Once, you know, I'll put it this way. If Ben gets off to the same start he did last year, which frankly was not very good, he had that five interception game in there against Jacksonville in October, I can't see him spending time on a Monday or a Tuesday in a film room or in a quarterback room trying to help Mason Rudolph. So I think it's TBD. I think it's to be determined. I think Ben is very, prideful. I think he's very protective. He wants to be this team's quarterback for a long time. I don't think he wants to groom the usurper. So I think it'll be very touch and go between them. And just one note on that, guys. The Steelers didn't hire a quarterback's coach this offseason, which to me is like one of the more mind-boggling decisions by the organization. They have an inside linebackers coach. They've got quality control coaches up the wazoo. And you'd think with four viable quarterbacks, Dobbs is in his second year, their third stringer from Tennessee, and with drafting Rudolph, that they would want a guy to, like, spend extra time with them in a quarterback room. But no, they don't. They've got an offensive coordinator who doubles as a quarterback's coach, who they're asking basically to be in two places at once.
That is a little weird. Is that so that Roethlisberger doesn't have to watch a quarterback's coach groom his replacement? Like, is that the inference here?
The inference is they hated Todd Haley and that they needed to promote the quarterback's coach to offensive coordinator, but they also have Mike Munchak, who is regarded as one of the best offensive line coaches in football, And I think they felt like in order to keep him from entertaining head coaching opportunities, that they needed to give him a sizable raise. So they're paying assistant coaches and position coaches probably more than they should. So I think like Munchak is making way more than an offensive line coach. He's probably making somewhere between what an offensive coordinator and a head coach makes.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a quarterback's coach promoted to offensive coordinator who's making coordinator money now. So I think they're doing like this, you know, committee approach, all hands on deck, like everybody's hand in the pile. We're all going to, like, as a village, nurture this guy. But I think he needs more one-on-one care. And, you know, I also wouldn't be surprised if they asked their, like, veteran backup, Landry Jones, who's been here for a while now, to basically make that part of his job description. Where, like, you know, he's familiar enough with the playbook and what they're trying to do that he has to take more of a hands-on approach with Rudolph.
Andrew, I feel like I still know you well enough to not have to ask you if you watched the All-Star game last night. I'm going to assume that you did at least watch some of the All-Star game. Sal and I both found, I was surprised how much I enjoyed the on-field, in-game interviews with players. What did you think of that?
So, like, whenever I see that, part of me wishes that they could do it during regular games,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's like you're getting teased by something that totally takes you behind the curtain and in this, like, ongoing chronic battle to try to make baseball more interesting. You see something like that last night, and I don't know, like, the first thing that pops into my head is, like, crap. Like, if I knew that they were going to do this every game, you know, maybe it would make baseball more interesting. But then again, I think, like, well, maybe if the game actually mattered, the players would just give very, like, boring answers because they needed to focus on obviously something that was way more important
right.
than talking to a play-by-play guy that they probably hate. So I think, like, in that thing, like, one time a year, it adds to it. You know, I've always been of the belief that the baseball All-Star game is the best All-Star game, not because I care about who wins or loses, but I don't care, like, what's at stake, whether it's a spring training game or whether it's an exhibition game or whether it's a celebrity softball game. Like, I like watching Max Scherzer pitch to Mike Trout. Like,
right.
It could be anywhere on earth. Like, I want to see those one-on-one matchups. So the first two innings of an All-Star game, I really like. Everything after that, I could take or leave. I didn't know who won the game until I got up and checked this morning.
Same here.
Better.
I totally agree on the first two innings, too, like the starters. And I don't know, Buck, the way Buck was talking about Scherzer, I was like waiting for Scherzer to turn into the Incredible Hulk or something, the way Buck was like, he's so dialed in, he's so intense. Like, what are you talking about? He's pitching, like, Jesus. But like
yeah.
once there's a new pitcher every inning, I just sort of, it puts me to sleep. I can't really handle that much. Although it's not that different from a regular game now with how the bullpens are used, but it just once they start rolling
Dave
a new guy
Roberts,
out.
So the Tampa probably looked at that game and said, "This is a good idea. Let's do this more often."
Right. All right, man. Well, look, nice catching up with you. I'm happy you made the time, and I look forward to talking to you again, and maybe, you know, who knows, someday maybe we'll get to visit with you actually in person sometime.
All right, Bulldog. Sal, good to talk to you too, man.
You too, Andrew. Thank you.
That is Andrew Filippone. Boy, it goes back a ways. He's like 10 years ago. He was here when Jason Peters was in a contract mess and eventually got traded by the Bills.
Put it this way. The first time I ever spoke to Andrew was the morning after I actually broke the TO news. He was hosting Sports Talk Saturday or whatever that might have been that day and had me on, and we talked about it. So that was, 2009?
Yeah.
The TO came?
Right. Anyway, he's doing great.
So
big success in Pittsburgh, 93.7 The Fan, Andrew Filippone. All right, let's take a break. We will get what we can out of Greg Brady from the Fan 590 in Toronto on this massive NBA deal involving Kawhi Leonard going from the Spurs to the Raptors. DeMar DeRozan is the key piece going from Toronto to San Antonio. Greg Brady is a morning host at Fan 590 in Toronto. He is up next with us. Sal's in for Mike. I'm the Bulldog, and this is WGR.
Kawhi conducted himself wonderfully while he was here. You know, he helped us win a fifth championship. As I said, he was a hard worker all the time. And we wish him well.
Greg Popovich, head coach of the San Antonio Spurs. Talking about Kawhi Leonard, traded today to the Raptors. DeMar DeRozan, the key player going back to San Antonio from Toronto. Sal Capaccio is in for Mike Shope. I am the Bulldog and live on the AT&T hotline. I think for the first time ever, Greg, I know Mike has been on your show up in Toronto many times. I've been on a couple times, and I don't recall that we've ever had you on our show. Greg Brady from the Fan 590 in Toronto.
And Sal has been on our show as well. Yeah, no, it took a big blockbuster. Huh? And I feel Sal might know this. I'm talking to the live music king of Buffalo Sports Radio, and I am the self-proclaimed Toronto live music sports radio king, and we've never been at the same gig together. I find that very strange.
At least as far as we know. I don't know. Art Park, maybe. I don't know if you've been to any gigs there. But, I'm envious. You get New Order and Peter Hook and, like, all this stuff that I would love to go see, but it's on weeknights, and, like, I can't make it to the Danforth on a Tuesday. You know, it's just tough for me.
Well, I'm on the other side. I live in Ajax, so that's way the other side of Buffalo. Buffalo may as well be Boston some nights when you try to when you got to cross Toronto. That's what Kawhi Leonard may find out. He may rather wish that it was Boston rather than Toronto. You never know.
So, Greg, tell me. I've been following along all day on Twitter, and you've got like this rundown of other trades that either were A, unpopular with fans, or B, it was thought that the person coming to Toronto was going to hate it in Toronto, and that turned out to be false. What do you think is going on here with Kawhi Leonard and these reports that he doesn't want to come and has no interest and may sit out?
Yeah, I mean, I want to hear it from him. This is sort of like people, and I'm on either side of that Colin Kaepernick fence where I know he's better than guys getting signed, but I do understand sometimes and nod when I hear people say, I want to hear him say it. I want to hear him say how badly he wants to play NFL football again. And then I'd know, and I want to hear Kawhi Leonard say, I want to not play in Toronto. Like, there's been a lot there over the last 12 months, and I heard your Greg Popovich clip. There's been a lot of passive-aggressive stuff from the Spurs and their players towards them, now their former teammate, and stuff from Greg Popovich. And I feel Greg Popovich, if we're going to compare him to Bill Belichick, and it happens all the time, Bill Belichick could stop individual New England Patriots from criticizing other individual New England Patriots. So that stuff's probably out there by the Spurs players for a reason. I mean, Tony Parker basically said, I had the same injury. It was a thousand times worse as in a quad injury, and I came back and played. And it doesn't get more non-subtle than that. Now, do I think that Toronto is his preferred destination? I don't. And I think the Raptors might be okay with that because I think they see a two-year window, but I also think they think the status quo and the played-out concept of the core they have may just not be good enough, and that Boston has usurped them in the last year and a half. And Philly, so I think the Raptors, had they kept DeRozan, could have beaten Philadelphia. I think Philadelphia fans are very disappointed today that they either A, weren't in on Kawhi Leonard, and they sure didn't get LeBron James, but also now that if they're to play the Raptors in a conference final or a second-round series, the Raptors probably easily have the best player on the court. I mean, easily Kawhi Leonard when he's healthy. Yeah. Right now, it's more impactful in a basketball game than Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid. We're going to see the best yet probably yet to come from both those players, but Kawhi's in his prime. And if he plays like he did 18 months ago, the Raptors have the best player. They might have the best player in the Raptors-Celtics series, though Boston has the deeper team.
Right. Is a lot of any discontent with this trade centered on the fact that DeRozan, by all appearances, loved Toronto, wanted to play in Toronto forever, and you've traded him away for a player who it seems, at least at first blush here, reportedly does not want to come?
Oh, yeah. I think it's the loyalty factor for DeMar DeRozan that he could have left, and as you guys would know, the Raptors players, and I don't know that's dissimilar from the Buffalo Bills. Sal mentioned T.O., and when T.O. said, I want to play there, or Mario Williams said, I'll take the money and play there, and when guys have lined up and said, I'll be a Buffalo Bill in the glory years and the non-glory years, the rest of the league kind of, you know, pricks an eyebrow up and says, okay, that's impressive. I may not have thought that. Same with Sabres players when it's going well. Everybody wanted to be a Buffalo Sabre between, say, 2004 and 2007, kind of like how the Leafs are now getting put. Patrick Marleau doesn't come to the Leafs. You guys know this 10 years ago or even 5 years ago. He comes now when they've got a better infrastructure. But to answer your question about the Raptors, yeah, I think there is that because there have been some just messy endings. I think for a lot of Toronto athletes, you look back to two Blue Jays World Series teams, there really wasn't a player to finish with that group and kind of say goodbye. You saw Robbie Alomar in a bunch of different uniforms. Joe Carter played with Baltimore and San Francisco. All the pitchers, Jack Morris, Dave Stewart, they all seem like hired guns. So I think there's something to the idea that here's a guy, Toronto's had a tough time recruiting NBA players. Chris Bosh left, Vince Carter left, Tracy McGrady left. And here's a guy who's inking on the dotted line to stay and probably would have stayed a long, long time. And you may have told him a week or so ago to his face that he would remain a Raptor. And we all know it's a cold business sometimes. And out the door you go for a guy who looks like on the surface at least is halfway to blame for all the dysfunction on his own team last year.
Here's the thing, though. The reason why this is striking people as, you know, odd, that, you know, DeRozan is a really good player. It's not like a free agent that you wooed here in Kawhi Leonard. You had to give up someone really good who, by all accounts, loved being in Toronto, loved playing in that organization, had a lot of loyalty. You said he was told he was under the impression he wouldn't get traded and still has 3 years left on his deal, and they gave up a first-round pick, by the way, in this deal as well. I think that's what people can't wrap their heads around. So kind of explain why that was the case in order to do this.
Yeah, I just don't. I think the money has to work. The Raptors were kind of pushed up against the edge of the salary cap, Sal. And though I think obviously hockey with that hard cap is easier to follow, easier to understand to the casual fan than NBA and certainly NFL with all the bonuses and guaranteed deals and out clauses. They needed to trade money for money in this deal. They couldn't have just brought Kawhi in for draft picks and futures. Philadelphia could have, which again probably has Sixers fans screaming about why they weren't more in on this if now is a good time to go for it. But I also understand it. I mean, LeBron James has knocked out, and the Cavs have knocked out the Raptors in either the second round or the conference finals the last three seasons. They're 2-12 in playoff games against LeBron James and the Cavs, and he finally leaves the conference as everyone expected him to do. And you got a 59-win team, and you fire your coach and you trade your best player for a guy who's only got the one-year commitment. And I would still say this, and I added this caveat earlier, Bulldog, that you know. I don't know that the Lakers can acquire Kawhi Leonard on September 18th. So a lot has to happen. They have to hold his contract for 2 months, but they could certainly work out the orchestrations of a deal beforehand. If I'm the Lakers, I'm calling the Raptors about Kawhi for this season. And if I'm the Raptors, I have to listen if Kawhi is giving me no indication whatsoever that he wants to be there in my team's uniform and certainly won't stay after 1 year. And the Lakers kind of hold some of the leverage because they can say, here's our offer, and if you don't like it, we're going to get him for free 12 months from this. Would have been like the Maple Leafs trading for Tavares at the deadline. When they looked around and read the tea leaves, outside of the run they probably make this year and maybe beat Boston and maybe flirt a little bit more with beating Tampa, why do it? Why give up a lot of – it would have cost a lot of assets for any team to get John Tavares at the deadline.
Right.
So they didn't do that. And I think that goes with the strain on the Raptors fan base. Guy wanted to be here, but I think he's a big – he's an all-star. He's not a superstar, and I think there's a big difference. Kawhi is the superstar.
And so you think this is a good idea? Like, did Toronto need to bust up that core, Lowry, DeRozan at the center of it? Like, did this need to happen?
I wouldn't have done it, but I'm finding myself defending the deal because I don't think the deal will work out long term because I would have liked to take two runs at this rather than one. But are the chances better in this 1 year than spread out over 2 years? Yeah, it is, and it's a great. I'll tell you what, it's a great time to go after Boston because Kyrie Irving, never mind the fact he's constantly hurt, has had some ruminations about leaving Boston, which I think is nuts. He wanted to be the alpha dog somewhere. He gets to be that in Boston, and with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and all these great young players and a superb young coach, an adoring fan base, why leave? I mean, where are you going next? Again to the West, where LeBron is again and where Golden State is? That makes no sense. But if Kyrie is to leave and they somehow either get assets from the Lakers for Kawhi Leonard, then the deal was worth making. But I wouldn't have done it, but I'm defending it because I think there's a lot of fans here saying he's not going to want to play here. He's going to sandbag it. He won't try that hard. He's going to be a malcontent. And I don't think any of those things will be true. This is a player that's got a lot to prove to the basketball community. And he's not signing a max deal with the Lakers by sitting out on the sidelines all year suspended by the Raptors. That's not going to happen.
Right. That's right.
Plus,
like that's one of my first thoughts is, like, what does he have to gain? Like, is he so good? I mean, he's one of the top three or four guys in the league, right? He's an MVP candidate. Yeah. So is he so good that he could just Jake it all year and like still sign a huge deal with LA in the offseason? I don't know. Is
Plus,
that
I'll say this. I mean, I think fans think that about the athletes aren't wired like that. He's going to go out. He's going to compete. And he is, I would say he would have too much pride to do something like that. Guys just don't do stuff like that.
No, I agree. I don't think they do. And I look at the same scenario with Kawhi that many a superstar has gone through. A, you've got something to prove. You're in a contract year. I don't think it's as much like Paul George as people say, because Paul George still in an American city, still gets to play with Russell Westbrook. He can be that sort of that number two, that Robin for the Batman. And I don't think he wasn't pushing to leave Indiana. It just leaked out that he really fancied going to the Lakers the next year and playing with LeBron. So Indiana said, we can't let this happen. We got to get something. And I think the dialogue was obviously a lot more professional than how things have gone and how would I put it, amicable than San Antonio. I mean, the late Roy Halladay did that here, guys, for baseball. At the end of the 08 season, he said, I got 2 years left on my deal. I'm probably not going to stay here. We're butting heads with the Yankees and Red Sox every year. This isn't going great. I want to try for a World Series. I've given you everything I can. I'm telling you now. And I think Toronto fans appreciated that from Halladay and almost rooted for him to win a World Series with the Phillies. Chris Bosh went through this, I might stay, I might not stay, I might stay, and then just upped and went to Miami. And nobody begrudged that he did it, but it was more how he did it. Again, I reference Sabres fans have been through this in free agency. There's a right way and a wrong way to leave your city when you got a passionate fan base. And I'm not sure Kawhi Leonard was I think Paul George wanted to do it the right way, but yeah. The Pacers said, we got to get something. And he kind of just fell for playing for more money and playing for what with Russell Westbrook in Oklahoma City.
Could be a pretty cool fall and winter if Kawhi Leonard actually shows up and is Kawhi Leonard for the Raptors and Tavares is on the Leafs. I mean, you guys are looking pretty good, Greg. Looking pretty good up there.
It's not bad. When I moved back to Ontario 10 years ago, and the Sabres were a juggernaut, and the Leafs hadn't even hired Brian Burke yet. So yeah, we want this Leafs Sabres rivalry. We're count on you. I picked Buffalo to make the playoffs last year as the fifth team out of the Atlantic. Thanks. I don't know that I would do that again, but they have to be better. We all know this.
Yeah, they
can't be worse, man.
No kidding. But on that note, is the plan for the Maple Leafs just to basically win every game 6-5 now? Is that what's happening here?
Well, I don't love their goalie as much as some people do here. I don't, and I worry he isn't good enough. And that tells you, I worked in Detroit for a decade, guys. I saw Chris Osgood probably think, I've got the Red Wings job, and then they traded for Dominic Hasek. You guys would remember that morning, and Osgood's like, are you kidding me? This is sort of pre-Twitter, pre-all that stuff, and he was blindsided by that. Curtis Joseph signs to leave Toronto, play in Detroit, and they recruit Dominic Hasek back the next year because they don't think Curtis Joseph did well enough or cared enough. So I've seen that kind of cold. Ken Hall got a great rep as a GM, but those are two pretty cold-blooded things that he did under the guise of winning, and that's how GMs are going to operate sometimes.
Greg, we really enjoyed this. I'm glad we thought to call you. Thanks for taking us up on the request, and we'll look forward to visiting with you again soon, man.
Pleasure, gentlemen. Have a good rest of the show. Thanks.
That is Greg Brady, the Fan 590. Works mornings up there in Toronto. Kawhi Leonard to the Raptors. DeMar DeRozan to the Spurs. Danny Green is going the other way from San Antonio to Toronto, too. And that's not just a throw-in. I think that's a pretty substantial piece, too, as I understand it anyway. But that is the big news in sports today. We'll take a timeout. We'll get back to some football as we move towards the 5 o'clock hour. Sales in for Mike. I am the Bulldog, and this is WGR.
Josh Allen has never been a 60% completion percent passer, not in high school, not in junior college, not in college. Now, you can try and build some layups into the passing game, but that's not really his game. And even in saying that, I've said that when you look at Josh Allen, I think you need to look at Cam Newton and Cam Newton's progression. Cam Newton has never really been a 60% passer. However, he has been able to be very, very productive because the offense fits his skill set.
That is former Bill and current NFL analyst Bucky Brooks talking with Steve Tasker and Chris Brown on One Bills Live earlier today. I like what the Raptors did. We'll see. I mean, I'm not going to pretend to know what Kawhi Leonard really wants to do, but the idea that LeBron is gone and you should be able to keep your core together and now make the finals What are you really trying to do? Just make the finals, or do you want to try to beat somebody? Like
So from a basketball trade, and I love the way Greg said it though. He did say, which made sense, like, you now have the best player on the court when you're in some of these series.
Right. That's it. And furthermore, like, you get to the finals and Kawhi Leonard's on your team. Like, I don't know, maybe you can take down Golden State. So I'm all right. You know, I get that fans, like, I'm detached. I don't live in Toronto. I don't really follow the Raptors that closely. So I'm not into DeMar DeRozan. All right. But if I know being a Sabres fan, and for maybe like the bulk of the post Drury Briere years, the core of the Sabres was stagnant. And yeah, they made the playoffs a couple times, but nobody thought that team was good enough to go win the Stanley Cup. And they just sort of kept going for a while, and it eventually needed to be torn down, and that's where we got to the tank and like all that stuff that happened. But I was frustrated by the stagnation. I wanted something to change. And I would understand a Raptors fan. I mean, they've won a lot of games the last few years. They've been a high seed. They've done a lot of good. But if you're really going to go try to win, even if it's only for 1 year, go. Go for it. So I'm rooting for Leonard to get there, and I'm not that worried about whether he loves it and wants to sign, but I don't think he's going to just sit home and pout. He's an NBA basketball player. I would think he'd want to reestablish his value as one of the best players in the league after the year he just had in San Antonio. So I'm eager to see it. I want to see the show. And I respect an organization going, yeah, we're good, but it's not good enough.
I get it. I do. I agree he will not sit out. But I also think the Lakers should be trying really hard to get him now from Toronto. We have seen deals in the past where there were clauses. Well, you can't trade him. That happened with Brett Favre when he was traded from Green Bay to the Jets, and they said you can't just send him to the Vikings right away, right? I mean, I think that was part of the clause of the trade. Maybe there's something in there. We haven't heard anything. But the Spurs said we are not sending him to L.A. He wanted to go to L.A. We are not sending him to the Lakers. If it's not, because this is all coming out, if I'm Magic Johnson, I'm making some phone calls.
Yep. Sure, I understand that, and maybe who knows? Maybe they do better in a Kawhi Leonard trade than the Spurs did,
right, if it's
Toronto. But I'm rooting for him to get there and play for Toronto. That's what I want to see, and I support them making the move because I don't think they were ready to beat. I mean, both the Celtics, the Pacers, everybody in the East that's a contender gave Cleveland a harder time than Toronto. Toronto rolled over and like wagged their tail when they played Cleveland this year. I mean, they got mauled by them. And Indiana took them to 7, and Boston took them to 7. I don't see it. So I'm good with what Toronto did today, even with the questions about Leonard actually wanting to be there or not. Anyway, all right, we'll take a timeout. Sal is in for Mike. I am the Bulldog. We'll revisit our subject from the very beginning of today's show, talking about the Bills and impactful newcomers on the team. We'll be looking for your calls as well as we continue. This is WGR.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.